Thank you very much. Come again soon.
Now serving, 23.
Yes, that's me.
Ah, hello. Welcome to Daryl's Data Deli. What can I get for you?
I got this data from you yesterday, and when I got back and opened it up, turns out it was bad.
Ooh, I'm so sorry about that. Here, let me take a look. Yeah, that is a problem. You need to talk with the source system manager. His shop is next door, and he's usually around this time of day.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Now serving, 24.
Yes, I need a customer report.
Certainly. Just fill out this form, and the product owner over there will take your order.
Now serving, 25.
You're back.
The source system manager told me that he doesn't fix bad data, and that if I need something corrected, you have to do it.
I'm sorry, ma'am, but the sign up here clearly says that we deliver the data to you the same as it's delivered to us. It's been our pledge since we first opened.
So you're saying I'm supposed to fix the data myself? Look, this is not going to work. I'll be back.
Now serving, 26.
Turkey and Swiss on whole wheat, please.
Coming right up.
Now serving, 27.
Oh.
Let's try this a different way. Here's my boss.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. And you are?
Todd Corporate, SVPIT and Certified Prodigy. And I understand that there's some bad data here. Now, we've got shareholder reports to produce, and we need you to provide us with the correct data. So let me know what I can do to help you to get this data fixed.
Look, you may be SVPIT, but when it comes to data and analytics, you don't know SHIT.
Hold on. Let me back in here a second. Listen, my name is Bob Twitt from the Acme Data Debt Collection Agency. Here's my card. I know how important it is to have the right data, but it's also important to maintain it in the right way, too. Sure, you could fix it here, but what about the next data problem and the next? Soon they're spending all their time chasing source system errors, and that, my friend, is a form of data debt, and you can be sure I'll be around to collect.
So, what are you going to do about this bad data?
Come with me. Let's go next door and visit the source system manager. That's where this problem needs to be solved. And after we have a little chat, I don't think he'll want to visit for me to collect on his data debt either.
I hope you're right.
I am. This place has the best sandwiches.
Now serving, 28.
This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper. Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Enterprise analytics management is often a thankless job. When things are running smoothly, nobody notices, and when they're not, you get heat from everywhere. From your users when the data is late or contains errors or the jobs run slow. From the source systems when you try to get something corrected and they tell you, hey, it's good enough for running the business, so don't hold your breath for changes to support analytics. And of course, from your own upper management because they're getting phone calls and emails about you from their peers.
This is definitely a scenario we can avoid. Leadership is sensitive to the efforts of engineers and salespeople. They are viewed as pitching in. Using analytics means accepting that your organization may have a new line function, the group monetizing your data.
Well, tell me more.
So, you're sitting on a huge pile of data, and as a leader, you're thinking there has to be gold in those hills. You may be right. That is the message with analytics and big data and AI. Also, you might want to be data-driven, and for sure, there is a connection between analytics and this data-driven talk. Well, time to reach out to the CIO or the CDO or even a CAO, which stands for Chief Analytics Officer, by the way, and get them started. Not so fast. First, a lot of the tales of wonder and reward about analytics and AI happened with early adopters. Remember, any new human endeavor has someone reaping huge benefits at the early stage, the finding the gold in the stream or the first railroad or the first mill to make wool. But then more participants show up. That's where analytics is now. So the first takeaway again is you're late to the big bucks game, all right? What you really need to do is align what your strategy is in your work with your business and with the analytics direction. Give people guidance on your strategy. Second, same people are going to need some air cover, because when you put in data-driven things and analytics, there are changes, and change meets resistance. Third, you need to learn more about data. This is not just a job for the CIO or the CDO. There's factors that you cannot delegate anymore. Yes, it is a change. So learn new things, just like you learn Six Sigma or Lean or Total Quality. There's some basics you need to learn, and let's cover those. What are the nuances of value? Data value, and then the risks. What are some of the basic elements of your data supply chain? What's the difference in data governance and data management? It's a real difference, and you need to support it. What is the liability in your data? And it grows daily. It took you 30 years to get here. Listen to our podcast on that. Stop rewarding spreadsheet heroes. The accepted practices of spreadsheet development and also service level agreements are actually harmful practices now. Things are changing big time, but change can be exciting. New experiences can be learned and enjoyed. And as always, be nice.
I have the pleasure of introducing our guest, Deep Sagani. He is Vice President of Enterprise Data Platforms at Personify Health, which was formerly Virgin Pulse. Before that, he was the Managing Director of Data and Analytics at FedEx, and before that, he had a similar position at ADT. So Deep, welcome to Rock Bottom.
Thank you, Mark. Glad to be here. Hello, everybody.
I guess that was kind of a meager introduction. So if you would, tell us a little more about Personify Health and about your role there.
Sure. So, you know, I started working with data almost 2.5 decades back when it was not so sexy to work with data. Now, of course, data is considered the new oil. I've spent so much time doing this, by the way, that I think they named the discipline of deep learning after me.
That's quite an honor.
I'm kidding, of course. But in terms of, you know, my role at Personify Health, it's Personify Health is a result of a merger of two organizations, one in well-being and the other in health plan administration. And for enterprise data, that presents a unique opportunity to bring clinical claims and wellness data all together for a given member. And, you know, that way creating a complete 360-degree view for their health and wellness. So this is by itself very powerful and very innovative. And that's what has me really excited about my role at Personify Health.
Yeah, having both ends of it, being able to see what are the best ways to prevent injuries or disease, or to, you know, have the front end and the back end, what you try and then the result of it. And then what about your role there?
Yeah, so my role is that of Chief of Enterprise Data. So I'm responsible for bringing in different kinds of data, whether it's claims data, eligibility data, platform eligibility or patient eligibility data, you know, some clinical data as well as other data that is related to your activities, like your, you know, sleep patterns and, you know, things that come in from the devices, right? The wellness or the fitness devices that you wear, and putting it all together in a warehouse and doing meaningful analytics, which is useful for our individual members, but also for our clients in terms of their return on investment from the platform, the value of investment that they're getting from the platform, and so on. So it's a huge data play. We are a digital organization. We are a data-first organization. So that's why it's exciting for me to be here.
Absolutely. You guys are all about the data. Now, you've been with a number of different companies throughout your career and always in the thick of data and analytics, as you mentioned. So I'm curious about your observations about how you've seen the field evolve, and especially how you've seen the management of data analytics teams change.
Yeah, so the field has evolved so much in so many different ways. You know, data used to be an afterthought. You know, reporting was always about what has already happened, maybe some trend analysis, but that was it, right? Now, of course, data is driving operations proactively. I just talked about Personify Health and how it is a very data-centric organization. But then take another industry, like we've both been in supply chain, right? And the physical networks are now optimized in real time with data. So, you know, the digital twin with all its AI and machine learning-driven models, it actually It's actually making predictions and prescribing how the how packages can be dynamically routed, right? So in other words, the digital twin is driving the physical network. So data is no longer reactive, it's proactive. It's driving operations in real time. So that's one big change that has happened over time. And then the other very important change in the mindset, at least my own mindset, is that I always used to think of data as an asset, but I feel now that data can be a huge liability too. Think about all the data breaches and the associated losses, both in dollar terms as well as maybe, even the reputational loss to the brand. Think about non-compliance and regulatory fines. Meta has already paid over $900 million or so on over a couple of instances to your EU. Also, think about bad data resulting in AI hallucinations now. So that's why data is can be a liability, but I think overall data is a huge opportunity that way because it can help drive competitive advantage for companies. And at the same time, once you take care of your data, then it takes care of your business.
Yep. And I can see how when you start talking about AI and being concerned about hallucinations, especially in the healthcare industry, right? It has one of the greatest potentials for, here's my symptoms, here's what's been going on, here's my test results. What do you think? Using AI to help with diagnoses, tremendous potential there. But at the same time, you're dealing with people's lives and health, and you've got to be really careful.
Absolutely, garbage in, garbage out. So that's why high quality data, diverse data, data that is unbiased and statistically significant, all of that needs to make its way into your AI model so that it doesn't hallucinate and it can actually really give you gospel, not garbage, right?
Absolutely. How about the people part of it? Working with the teams and the skills and.
Yeah, I mean, the team management, of course, has become much more complex. It's really important now because data by itself is such a diverse function, or it has become such a diverse function, that it's very important to get the right people in the right seats. And there are so many different diverse sets of skills that you need on a data team that you really need to proactively manage your skills matrix. And I've seen organization after organization where there is not a analysis done on skills matrix and therefore skill gaps, and it doesn't then allow you to plan for your people, both in terms of getting people with new skills in as well as growth for the existing people. And if you don't do it, then obviously you are neglecting the most important part, which is people. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail, right? That's what
Absolutely.
Benjamin Franklin said, and that's especially true when it comes to people planning. The other thing is, I think what's also evolving now is human team members versus digital and AI team members, and we'll see this more and more now, is what is it that's best done by human team members, and what is it that can be offloaded, which could be mundane, could be routine, could be other things. It could be offloaded to digital or AI team members for more productivity. So we'll see that as the new frontier in team management.
Yeah, that's. I think that's really interesting. I just imagine the guy from iRobot sitting down at a cubicle and getting the work done. But it's true that there's a lot of some of that mundane work that could be offloaded onto digital team members. I had not seen that articulated that way yet. So one of the largest challenges in analytics management is getting the go-ahead to pursue information management projects, right? It requires forward thinking on the part of management. It requires trust by the development teams, right? Because you're going to be asking them to do a bunch of stuff that at least they often consider to be unrelated to delivering applications, understanding their data, providing their data for the analytic, and trusting that that investment will pay dividends for the company generally. And so, what approaches have you found to be successful in moving these information management projects forward?
Yeah, I think gone are the days when you would take on a big bang data warehousing project or data governance project. I think the information management projects now need to be very value driven, and that value has to be proven or demonstrated quickly. It has to be proven iteratively again and again, and has to be measurable, right? So that's how you grow your information management discipline. You just can't say, "Hey, I want to do this for 4 years," and then come back. That doesn't happen anymore, right? So So that's one. You talked about the importance of making your people understand the vision and the big picture, because what are they working towards? What's the business value in it? It's very important. They're writing code, but what does that code mean for the business at the end of the day? I think that's a very important visibility that you need to provide to your team. So in overall, I think strongly that what got us here won't get us there. We have to move away from what I call defensive strategies around data management to more offensive strategies, which are more business value driven. And of course, as I said, business value that can be measured and demonstrated in along a number of terms, right? In terms of reduced development time, faster idea to release, automation, or even allowing business to self-serve, which means that there's a lower demand on IT, lower number of data issues, lower number of tickets. So those are some of the ways in which I think we prove the value of information management projects. And then finally, I think it's very important to read the room, especially when you're talking about an overall buy-in for information management projects. Now, from junior management to senior management and executive management, I think the focus shifts from technical processes to operational processes to overall business value. So my strong advice is read the room accordingly and present your information project as such.
Data management for its own sake, I don't think is going to fly anymore. Not that it really flew very much before ever, but right. definitely yeah. not now.
Yeah, I know. It's many times you think of pure data management as inventing a better mousetrap, right? And what is the value of it? So that's why it needs to be very value driven. It's very important. Data and management is extremely important, especially we talked about artificial intelligence and garbage in, garbage out. But then again, as I said, it needs to be on the back of really value driving projects.
Yep. Now, speaking of executives, I saw that you had just given a couple of lectures to budding CXOs at the SMU Business School. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Sometimes we call that CDO camp. We can call that CXO camp, I guess, in this case. But tell us a little bit about the two classes. And did you notice any specific points that particularly resonated with the CXOs in the room, speaking of reading the room?
Yeah, I had two guest lectures. The first one was how to become a data-driven organization. And that was a lot about what I already kind of mentioned here. That's the change that is happening in data now driving operations proactively, and we are becoming a real-time, event-driven, data-driven kind of world. The second lecture was on data and AI and how data is the brain behind AI. And if you get the data wrong, then you get the hallucinations on the AI. Because AI is, it trains on data, it is validated on data, it's tested on data, it runs on data. And over time, data drift happens and AI shifts as well. Your models drift. So again, how to manage your AI in light of your data is what the subject of the second class or second guest lecture was. And, a number of things, we talked about. One of the things that I observed across the board, across, all those students from different industry, is that the data is highly inoperable even today, right? It's highly siloed across the different systems within companies. And then, of course, if companies have to talk to each other in the industry, then also there are no standards or very few standards, and the data is highly siloed. In fact, very much so even in healthcare, it's one of the biggest problems that I see, that the data is highly non-interoperable across the healthcare industry.
I think we're all wrestling with those same challenges, especially now exposed by AI.
Yeah, and AI is not at least not yet, it's not artificial general intelligence yet. So it doesn't have that cross-domain understanding of, just thinking like you and bringing everything together. You have to tell AI what to do, right? So what is happening now is all of these tools that we used to use, whether you're talking about data discovery tool like Alation or Collibra, you're talking about data integration tools like Informatica or, the Snowflakes of the world, all of them are getting AI enabled, which means all of them are becoming more intelligent. And that means that your data integration and interoperability becomes easier. But it's not like you can just push a magic button or wave a magic wand and your data will just get integrated altogether. And so one of the things we talked about in the class is you don't need to always think about bringing the data physically together. You don't need to, and you cannot in some cases, right? There's so much of data gravity in different clouds and different systems. You can't physically get all the data together, but at least you can try and build a meta model to talk the same language across those distributed data sets and bringing them all together in terms of metadata. And then you can connect with each and therefore get your get the data talking to each other, much like what you do in data virtualization, but still more, even more strongly. So I recall our friend at FedEx, Harold Taylor, used to say, "One ring to rule them all," right? I
Definitely.
think that's what your catalog of catalogs or your metadata catalog can really get you is that interconnectivity across different distributed data sets
Yep. And
and
that's becoming
across
more and
languages.
more important.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. That was an interesting discussion we had in the class the other day.
So here at the Rock Bottom Data Feed, we always conclude our interviews with the same two questions, and I think I know the answer to the first already. That if you could wave a magic wand, here's magic wand coming back. What data related thing would you have happen? And you just mentioned interoperability across the silos, bringing the metadata together at least. Anything else on that list?
No, I particularly feel this pain because I'm in healthcare and healthcare is highly fragmented. We need standards for making data interoperable. But more importantly, even if some standards exist, we need adherence to those standards, which is missing a lot in the healthcare industry now. This is something which is demonstrated much better in other industries like banking and finance, the adherence to standards, not so much in healthcare in terms of systems connecting with each other. For instance, there is no single way to identify a person across the healthcare industry. And many systems I've seen still depend on social security numbers, which is not the way to go.
No.
So I feel healthcare has a long way to go. And of course, all this needs to be done keeping data privacy in play and in under consideration, obviously, with HIPAA rules and all that.
Yep, a lot of opportunity here. Now, we had talked before. You had mentioned that your answer to that question may have evolved over the past few years, from when you were a director at previous companies to now. And so I'm interested in how that perspective, especially when it comes to that question, has changed over the past several years.
Yeah, so some of those things I talked about, right? That now what's very, very clear is that data is it's extremely important. It's something that can give you competitive advantage, and companies, data, especially data-driven companies, are using it to drive customer value. They're using it to drive even new revenue models. They are able to monetize their data because they offer these as value-added services to their clients, and the clients need that visibility into data. So that is something that has changed. Something I didn't really understand perhaps when, in the formative years around the possibilities around data. For us at that time, data quality was the most important. Okay, you get clean data, build a great star schema or a warehouse in the warehouse, and you're good. But the value of something that has become clearer over the years, and I think the industry now itself values it much more than what it used to, and that's why we say data is the new oil, right? Because now, just like oil, raw data is not very useful, but when it is processed, when it is cleansed, processed, and then it becomes very powerful, and that's the powerful fuel that you use to drive your competitive advantage, your business value, your client experience, even new revenue models, and even more data security. I mean, the cleaner data you have, the more governed data you have, the more secure it can be. So I think it's overall, I often used to think of certain things in data realm as a burden, like data quality work and all that. But I think I've come to realize it's a huge opportunity, not a burden.
Definitely. And I think that's a mindset shift that many would be helped in making, changing the way that these areas are viewed and then looking at them as the opportunity.
Yep.
So the second question we ask all of our guests is to tell us about a non-data person that's been influential in your life and career and how.
A non-data person, that's an interesting question. One person who's always inspired me is Stephen Hawking, who really proved that your contribution to the world does not have to be limited by your limitations, physical or otherwise. He was severely paralyzed, but then again, traveled across the universe in a way to explore its origins and explain its complex phenomena. So, it's amazing how he what he could do despite all his limitations. So I think he's really inspiring.
I agree. I read A Brief History of Time several years ago, and I can't claim that I understood all of it. I understood about the first two-thirds of it, but I appreciate that he wrote it in a way that was understandable to us civilians.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Deep. It's been great catching up a little bit, but don't go away. We'll have you back in a few minutes for our famous game show.
Oh, wow. Okay. Looking forward to it.
This is Todd Corbett, back to thank our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros. With Hubris, it's not just data, it's an attitude.
Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. Why do companies spend so much effort on application testing? I mean, really, some companies have entire organizations dedicated to testing, and at the very least, most development groups have individuals that define, refine, and execute test cases. All that time and money just to find where the application developers messed up. Seems to me it would be cheaper and more efficient to hire better developers that produced less buggy code. Now, I'm being facetious, of course, but it does raise a serious question. How many of these code defects are caused by an insufficient understanding of the data? It's difficult to tease out the impact of data errors because in most studies, they're lumped into categories like code errors or design errors, requirements errors, and the like. Requirements analysis software goes a long way toward identifying objects shared between modules and applications, but requirements often don't get to the level of detail that developers require. The source system team has to fully and properly curate the metadata for the objects it creates, and the target system team has to understand the structure and content of the objects it consumes. If that information isn't available, then demand it, and don't start work until you have it. Because more often than not, data errors are categorized as application defects. After all, it was the application output that was incorrect, the requirement specified the right object, and the design specified the right source for that object. Misunderstanding and miscommunication are common, especially when the data is not well understood. Sometimes it seems like we're looking everywhere except at the data itself. Why do we not treat data correctness, and more importantly, data understanding, with the same rigor that we treat application correctness? Between now and next time, the one thing you can do is to take a closer look at the root cause of your software defects. You may discover that the real root cause of your code, design, and requirements errors is a lack of data understanding. That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com. Okay, we're back with Deep Sagani for our famous game show, the Audio Data Rorschach Test. Now, I'm going to play a snippet of royalty-free music, and it's royalty-free because we don't have any budget. And after I play it, just tell us the first thing that pops into your head related to data or data projects or analytics or anything like that. Okay, you ready?
Yep.
All right. Now, in order to maintain the illusion of randomness, pick a number between 1 and 5.
Okay, let's go with 3.
Okay, 3 it is. All right, here we go. Number 3. Wow, that's a short one. All right.
It reminds me of data wrangling that we do with noisy data, and then finally the data falling into that much needed format, the epiphany of data congruence at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the sound of data congruence.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, Deep, thank you very much for being our guest on the Rock Bottom Data Feed. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to our paths crossing again very soon.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
And thanks again to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros, reminding you that any resemblance to actual events, persons, or businesses, living or dead, is purely coincidental. There's a mindset shift required before you can become truly data-driven. Our guest mentioned it, and Mark and I have seen it in companies we've worked with. And that means viewing data quality, data security, information management as opportunities, not as burdens. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, The Fuss About Analytics Management, at our website, counterthreadedproductions.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counter Threaded production. Copyright 2024. All rights reserved.